Hello and welcome to another installment of the Grant Street Experience. I'm your host, Grant Irvin, and we have an exciting episode for you here today to talk about recycling, an often discussed topic in the Office of Sustainability and Resilience. And today we have some of our friends with us from the Division of Environmental Services and the Department of Public Works. But first, I'm going to introduce our co-host here, Rebecca Kiernan. Rebecca, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Grant.
So you were able to corral the recycling team. So that's pretty exciting. Thank you.
That's right.
So maybe to get started, if everyone can, we also have Afton Giles with us from the Sustainability and Resilience team. Maybe Afton, we'll start with you and then go to Teresa and Omeye, and if you guys can introduce yourself and kind of the role that you guys play.
Sure. Hi, my name is Afton Giles. I am the Senior Sustainability Coordinator for the City of Pittsburgh out of the Department of Planning, the Division of Sustainability and Resilience. So I'm actually not officially part of Environmental Services, but I play one on TV occasionally.
Hey, good morning, Grant and Rebecca and Afton and everyone on here. Yeah, I'm Teresa Bradley, the Recycling Supervisor for the Bureau of Environmental Services, and we're housed under the Department of Public Works. And what is my role? Well, it's to, we tend to kind of focus on things, and our focus right now heavily is on outreach and education, and really looking at our recycling stream as we're getting a lot of contamination. But we have everything that we manage. We manage a lot of contracts, everything from wood waste to our material recovery facility, and even 6 drop-off centers. So that's part of what I do. And we have a small and mighty team. And there's a 4 of us. We also work on compliance. So that's another part of what we work on. But at the Bureau of Environmental Services, we're the friendly, I like to say friendly men and women that are out there collecting your trash and recycling, or every other week recycling, I should say, for the city of Pittsburgh. And we service roughly 100,000 homes.
Awesome. And Omeye?
Hi, yeah, my name is Amaya Akwali. I'm a recycling specialist in the Bureau of Environmental Services. And I just kind of handle lots of different special projects. You know, we had our tree collection this past year, so we had to get that together, or actually a couple of months ago. So now we're moving into the mulch part. So we're looking at the data, and we're looking at where we can, the dates and times where we can have those things picked up. So like, it's just special projects all over the place, not just recycling, but a lot of other refuse related things as well. So yeah, happy to be here. Thank you for having us.
Awesome, this is great. Teresa, maybe to start with you, can you give us a day in the life of recycling? You know, so like if we were to, you guys get to see what's kind of a symphony of logistics that happens. Most residents basically just, you know, they take the recycling out to the curb. A team comes and picks it up, puts it in a truck and takes it away. But there's a whole lot of work that goes on behind the scenes in order to make that happen. Maybe could you paint the picture of what that logistics activity or symphony looks like in order to show us what happens behind the scenes?
Yeah, absolutely. And like Amaya was mentioning, we manage a lot of projects. And so civil, like a day in the office, it's almost like a game of ping pong. Honestly, it's like boom, 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 boom. We also manage the 311, the Mayor Service Center, the Q Alert system. So if we do have any missed recycling, we dispatch that out. That is a big part of what we do in environmental services. We are looking at new ways right now to have more and more of those calls go through that system so we can start tracking it. So tracking is another part of it. But I'll be honest, like if I were to leave the office and go to my drop-off center, any drop-off center would probably find some illegal dumping, unfortunately. So then I'd have to solve that, or Ame would have to solve that, or someone from our office. So yeah, there's just constant things happening. And so our program supervisor, he manages more if there's things that are happening in the office with, say, if there's an injury. And unfortunately, and especially this time of year, we've had like record snow, right? I think in over a decade, that there's a lot of that happening. And so sometimes it's literally, it's a lot of day of stuff. So figuring out, you know, calling the supervisors from the divisions and making sure that those streets are salted so that our trucks can get down. So it's constant. Another big thing that we manage twice a week is our e-waste and household hazardous waste collection events that happen at Environmental Services. So those are happening as well on Wednesdays and Sundays. So we manage that. So there's, we're never bored. there's constant things happening. So
that's awesome. And then, you were talking about special projects. You get your hands in kind of a lot of different activities. Maybe could you describe a couple of those for listeners?
Yeah, for sure. So one of my special projects this year, in conjunction with working with the Clean Pittsburgh Commission, very important to keep the city clean. So Environmental Services plays a big part of that. And one of our it's kind of a smaller project, just kind of getting it started this past year with the election season, very tense season this past year. And so we thought about maybe brightening up our streets a little bit much more quicker after the election by holding an election sign collection program, mm-hmm. where we had, we utilized our three divisions, and we also left it open for people to have community collections where people could take their yard signs, which are, a very rigid plastic, and we have a local place where they can be recycled. And so we partnered with our divisions to have a location in the divisions where people can bring those signs and the metal, stand. We have scrap bins at the divisions that the divisions use. So they would take those materials and put them in the scrap bins. And the plastic materials, we have the rigid plastic, and we also have the films, which are basically kind of a grocery bag. And so we collected those materials, and we worked with, local places that had compactors to take the films. And then we worked with Gateway up in Robinson to take the rigid plastic. So, we're just all about those local partnerships to help, keep the materials from the landfill and hopefully, ensuring that they have a second use. We bringing back the Christmas tree recycling was big. We kind of kick that back off as, an Environmental Services thing this is our third year, really getting involved in the way that we have been. So, we would love to have the trees collected at the curb, but we do not have the infrastructure and the capability to do so. Mm-hmm. So, again, utilizing our divisions, you could usually take your leaf waste there, you can take shrubs, clippings to the divisions, and we can also take a tree there. So we did utilize the divisions again this year. We would usually have more locations throughout the city to serve more of our the residents. And so instead of doing that, because of the pandemic we have still going through, kind of kept the divisions and only had one smaller location, and that was at the zoo. So the zoo has that overflow parking, and we said, hey, bring your trees there. And, there's really no expectation of how many number of trees we will get. And I remember speaking with Manny, our compliance foreman, small little bet, hey, how many trees do you think we'll collect this year? And we were looking at this huge pile, and, he kind of went on the low end with 250. And I was like, man, okay, I'm going to win this. So it was 600. And lo and behold, we collected 2,242 trees. They were collected as they were chipped. Yeah, it was a lot of trees. And that is kind of on par, around the same amount we would collect if we had, the individual locations peppered throughout the city. So, people still had that, drive to take their trees to a more centralized location. And that is without counting, because we're doing tonnages at the division. So it's without those numbers. So we really kind of blew it out of the park this year. And, we are, we're going to have mulch pickups.
Literally.
We did
it out of the park this year. On both of those cases, like the yard signs and the tree collection, so obviously getting them is a big deal. What happens on the back end? What are some of the reuse or recycled kind of content that comes out of those collections?
Yeah, for sure. So with the yard signs specifically, I would like to maybe talk about the film. So we partnered with someone who had a compactor, and they from what I heard as a citizen, this is, I may or may not be wrong, but Trex, which is they take the films and they compact them and turn them into a decking. And actually, my partner's parents just got a new deck and they use Trex. And, you know, looking into that, it was a recycled product from plastic bags. It's kind of, in a way, you can think of it as a circular economy. It might, you know, might go to one place. It might go further out to Trex or whatever company that reuses it. But it sometimes it might not be the same bag, but, you know, something similar comes back into the city. So, in lieu of getting a virgin plastic material for your deck, you can utilize something that has a little bit more of a history.
That's interesting. Omiye mentioned the Clean Pittsburgh Commission. Afton, you're a member of the Clean Pittsburgh Commission. Could you explain for listeners what is the Clean Pittsburgh Commission and kind of the role that it plays in city government?
Sure. So the Clean Pittsburgh Commission is a group of a lot of awesome people that come together. Most of them are from a lot of the different nonprofits throughout the city of Pittsburgh. You have like the Pennsylvania Resource Center. You have people from some of the trash collection companies. It's just a really nice hodgepodge of the people who deal with waste and who like to talk trash all the time, all together. And they're coordinated by the city of Pittsburgh as a commission. We're written into code and we have a budget and everything else. So we do have some city support and we're able to use our resources and pull those resources together along with a lot of community support from volunteers that work avidly in the different various communities in order to come together to make sure that our city is as clean as possible. We do a lot of different projects every year. Sometimes they change. A lot of them come from sort of advocacy and from need. But one of the main projects that we do every year would be some of the legal dump cleanups. So we're able to work with a lot of the different communities that have some of the dump sites that tend to collect on sometimes a monthly basis, unfortunately, and we're able to coordinate cleanups for those. We usually have a neighborhood of focus. The neighborhood of focus is usually done with one of the councilmen or councilwomen, and we're able to coordinate with them to make sure that we take the time to really look at their community and see if we can help clean up some of the hot spots that they have there. We've been able to add some cameras to some of those illegal dump sites to try to help stop repeat offenders and to try to prosecute some of the offenders as well, which is sort of really cutting edge for us as a city. The enforcement is always sort of a challenge for us. And we also do some fun stuff too. We were able to work with Love Your Block this past year. We were able to give out a good bit of funding so that people can not only clean up their communities, but actually do some projects in their communities, working in community gardens and things like that to help to do some beautification. We've also done some housing projects where we were able to go to some of the homes that have been sort of cleaned up but are abandoned and actually put up some really nice painted art to make them look a little bit more appealing for people who want to buy them as well. So we do a lot of little different things, and we encourage community participation. So, you know, if anybody's interested, we definitely encourage you to go online, look us up, and to please join.
Terrific. That's awesome. Omiye also was doing a lot of name dropping here when she was talking and sparking some conversation. She mentioned the term circular economy. Rebecca, you've been involved with a conversation with the University of Pittsburgh and local organization called Construction Junction around the idea of a circular economy hub, effectively starting to connect some of the dots in this space. Maybe for listeners, if you can explain what circular economy is, and it's not an easy job, but that's why I'm tossing it to you to see if you can help out. Explain what the circular economy is and what are some of the things that are happening in Pittsburgh in that space.
So let's see. So circular economy, instead of the traditional extraction, use, and then throw away model, which is like linear, circular economy is more, I guess there's always that extraction at some point, but then the use and then the reuse and the recycling and then the put back into another material or project. But basically it's continuing to use those materials over and over again so that we're, you know, eventually getting rid of that extraction portion of it and the waste portion of it. So I guess in Pittsburgh, you know, we have this zero waste by 2030 target, which seems a little bit insurmountable. But if we are
going to make it happen,
I know it's tough, but if we are going to get to that, then we need to start thinking about all the different streams that we could get out of the landfill, the different waste streams. So like Oma was saying, you know, the different films that come off of plastics and Christmas trees. And those are all things that would otherwise go to landfill, right? How do we find those materials, extract those materials, and then clean out those materials so that they're not contaminated with other things, and then also find like a reuse or some kind of innovative use for them, which is where we're partnering with the University of Pittsburgh. Construction Junction, you mentioned, does a really good job of that. So they already have that model where they're taking back that construction and demolition waste. So how do we take organizations like Construction Junction and then get them to scale? Mm-hmm. So we've been having some conversations about like what type of a site might we need? Would we need, you know, office space? Do we need new bins? Would people come and separate out their own materials, or is there some kind of way that we could systematically do it a little bit better as the city?
That's awesome. You know, the thing that's interesting too about those conversations is that there's so many local actors in that space, in that ecosystem. So, you know, you have organizations like Construction Junction, or we were talking with Lisa Scales from the Food Bank and 412 Food Rescue, and the new companies starting up like Doors Unhinged. And then longstanding kind of Pittsburgh names like Alcoa and Covestro that are, you know, working in kind of recycling aluminum or polymer materials and things of that nature. And it's really, I think, interesting how Pittsburgh's at the core of a lot of this type of work. You know, Teresa, one of the things that a lot of folks typically don't understand, and maybe it came into the news a little bit over the last couple of years, is how recycling is a market. It's a global market, right? Like we understand what happens in our kitchens and at the curbside, but there's a whole kind of global network of materials that are kind of flowing around the world. And I guess it was probably about 2 years ago now that China basically kind of put up a wall in terms of accepting, materials from the United States. How has that, maybe if you could talk a little bit about that situation, but how has that impacted us? Or how do those global markets impact us here in Pittsburgh?
Yeah, wow. There was a thought when we go, if we talk about another project, I do want to talk about, I would like to, if I could, just piggyback real quick on what Rebecca's saying about the circular economy as a city municipality and what we're doing, not just environmental services, but as a city, and Afton's part of this as well. As we're looking at, for example, with our bins, we want to make sure we get post-consumer plastic. If we are putting out outreach materials, we want it to be at least 30% post-consumer recycled paper. And for folks out there that don't know what that is, you know, we're talking about the circular economy. We just need to be really looking at that as a city, that if, because we want to keep driving, we want to keep continuing our recycling markets. And so this is a segue into kind of what you're talking about, Grant, is, yeah, a couple years ago, it was probably 3 years ago, wasn't looking good. And it hasn't fully rebound. The recycling markets haven't fully rebound. And it's really, when you look at the markets, it is some of the paper, but it's really the plastics. I think that's the confusion for a lot of folks. And so we actually had to, our material recovery facility, which is based in Hazelwood here in Pittsburgh, they came to us and they said,
affectionately, you know, we were the MRF, right?
The MRF, the material recovery facility. Yeah, we say MRF, right? But for folks out there, you know, I speak in a lot of acronyms, and I have to kind of tell myself to also say what that is. But yeah, they came to us and we were up for renewal, and it's one of the contracts we manage in environmental services. We sat down at the table and they said, sorry, this has to go back out to bid. And it was primarily because of just the contamination, and they were stockpiling. I mean, you hear these stories where there's like different ports of entry and they're just stockpiling these. And this was happening for months. And so there's a big scramble, but the big problem is when we look at our system, and most systems are set up like this, there's a few in the United States that are not single stream. They're called dual stream. And we actually practice dual streams at our drop-off centers. If you go there, you'll see, okay, this is for cardboard, you know, this is glass. We're doing a lot of source separation because at the end of the day, like we were mentioning, these are marketable commodities, mm-hmm. right? If we're going to talk about circular economy, if we're going to talk about, we want to make sure that we're getting, you know, that we're closing the loop. And you look at like a lot of the surrounding communities stopping taking the glass, and we still take glass curbside. I understand, you know, it's not the best in terms of, you know, what happens. It's like unscrambling an egg. We do single stream system, right? And so it gets compacted in the truck. But one of our biggest challenges is it's the glass and the plastics and things, but it's the plastic bags. That is a big thing. And for 30 plus years, that's been the system of the city of Pittsburgh. So that's what we're really looking at, is removing that first. And then we did a couple years ago, we stopped and we're taking very basic recyclables. And I know it's really difficult for folks. They really want that yogurt container to go in, but we also have to look at what our MRF and what the markets are, you know, taking. So that yogurt container, yes, you know, I like to say that not everything, most things are recyclable, but not everything curbside. Mm-hmm. And so if you're looking at the markets, yes, they are taking those. They're still bailing the 3-7 plastics, but there's really not a market. And to be frank, there really wasn't a market. It was a lot of stuff, and it still is in some municipalities on the West Coast, shipped overseas. And the number one and number two neck bottles, those are the real good marketable commodities that can be downcycled and made into other products like carpets and the textiles and whatnot. They were cherry picking a lot of that, the good stuff. And then the other stuff, unfortunately, is being landfilled or made it into the waterways, oceans, or was incinerated. So it is tough to talk about. I think, you know, like you're mentioning, folks, they set it out on the curb and it's going to be magically made into something else. But a lot of people don't understand that the downstream part of recycling. So what we're trying to do in Pittsburgh, we're going to be launching, along with the PA Resources Council, a series of webinars all the way, like starting in March, even with municipal employees too, right? Yeah. We're going to be hitting all different groups, residents, to let them know that this is what we take. These are the set out times. I mean, very basic, just so folks can understand. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's a lot.
You touched on a lot of really important stuff there. Let's kind of dive into that. So the bags, talk about why they're such an impediment to the system.
Yeah, so there's multiple reasons. One of the biggest reason is it's really those grocery bags. Mm-hmm. You know, our system, it was set up that, you know, you go to Giant Eagle, for example, or Walmart, and you put your materials in it, and then, or you know, you put your items in it at the grocery store, you get home, and then you put your recyclables back in. And that's really been the system. And then you'd set it out there. And then when that gets compacted, I mean, if you would go to our MRF, a lot of the plastic bags, it hasn't been as bad as it once was, but also in terms of agronomics. So our folks like bending over and picking up like 25 to 30 of those is tough stuff, right? And so if you have a bin or something like a cart under 35 gallons that can easily just be dumped, not easily, but dump quickly and move on instead of standing there. Also, they cause a lot of litter. You've seen these bags, right, blowing all over, unfortunately, in trees, and especially this time of year. And then when March hits, or, you know, when the things start thawing out, you see these bags all over, and they're all in the, because, you know, if you can only put like 5 bottles or something, I mean, you can't put much material in a small grocery bag in terms of recycling. And so sometimes they blow because they're lightweight, but once they get compacted and they go to the MRF, that's where they really wreak havoc. So there's something at the front of the line at the MRF. It's called a star screen.
Okay.
And that's where the material kind of like jumbles it, but the bags get entwined in that. And I actually just had a conversation with the MRF operator, and up to 10 hours a week, They have to spend, they have to shut the line down and cut the bags out. Wow. So we're not helping, right? We're not part of the solution. So that's why the past couple years really shifted in our outreach and messaging's like, get a bin, you know, just move away, put your material loose. Yep. And here's what you can put in there. And it has changed the past couple years. It's gotten better on some of our routes, but so those are, and then it degrades the material. So a lot of the times when the paper can't be, it can't easily be removed from those bags that's been so compacted. So what happens? It's landfill.
Mm-hmm. So what you mentioned, one of the solutions, which has been improving the quality of, or reducing the contamination and improving the quality through bins. You know, the three of you have actually, all four of you have been involved in kind of the bin project. And so maybe if we want to talk about the bin project for a minute, in terms of the city's commitment to expanding, improving the, reducing the quality, or increasing the quality by reducing the contamination. What is the bin project, and how is that helping the process?
Yeah, I can go ahead and start briefly. And I know Ame, she's been working hard on this too. And like you mentioned, Afton and Rebecca, so it would be great for them to chime in. But the bin project, we're very fortunate. So a couple years ago, we received some grant money from the DEP, Department of Environmental Protection. And when we were looking at it, it would roughly get us about 13,000 bins. And we're like, oh, okay, well, that's starting somewhere. So the city of Pittsburgh, we, you know, it's really up to the resident. So it's all built in the city taxes. And I actually looked at some math, and it's like roughly like $8.50 per household per month for us to collect trash and recycling. So then we put the onerous, you know, if we're going to say, hey, you know, we're moving away from bags, we really need to, in my opinion, if we're going to be successful at this, give the resident the equipment, as we would say, give them the bin, give them the outreach and the information, education of why this is important, and have these conversations. And so we started this past fall in October and November. We did kind of, we call it like a pilot area. We like to say pilots. But we started in East Liberty, Garfield, and Highland Park. And the reason why we started there is we're redoing a lot of our routes at Environmental Service to balance our routes, because we have a lot of trucks where some are picking up more and less and whatnot. So we started there, and it was roughly 5,500 homes. And I actually talked to our compliance form yesterday. He went back, because it was a Monday was recycling this past week. He said the litter's down in those areas. A lot of people are complying. They're not putting the bags in. So we're seen as a success. So we did audit at our MRF to see if, to basically get the percentage of the bags and the residuals before we rolled out. So we're getting ready to do a post, and it would be good to share that information with you guys. But so we're like, okay, we have a little bit here, a little bit of money. It didn't sit very well with me. So we brought in a national partner called the Recycling Partnership. And they really are into making sure that municipalities are set up for success and raising funds to make sure that they can, you know, bring in the money. So we created a budget. It's roughly going to cost $2.3 million to hit every home. And then council voted last year on matching that and brought in some money in 2020, actually, for the capital budget. So we're moving forward right now with hitting this year 60,000 homes. So we're going to be over half. So we're actually ahead of schedule. We're actually under budget. And then I'll leave it there. I could keep talking, but it's a big project. It really is.
Toby and Afton, maybe you guys want to chime in here on kind of your roles in the project.
Sure. So Teresa sort of jumped to the end and fun part of the project, but I will say that, you know, recycling is something that we've known has been an issue in Pittsburgh for a number of years. I've been with the city for about 9 years, going on 10 very soon. And when I first came in, one of the things that we talked about was recycling and trying to get bins rolled out and bins done. So one of the first things that we actually did almost like 8-9 years ago was we did a pilot in the north side. We were looking at some of the various routes. We actually picked the hardest route in the entire city to try to use as a test case to see if we're going to be able to deploy bins and to deploy some new trash systems as well. So we've done a lot of trial and error testing over the course of the last 9 years to sort of get where we are now, including having discussions about budgets, having discussions about like how much recycled content can be put into a bin, if we can do, you know, what we can do, if we can do it, what types of trucks we can have, will the trucks fit down the streets? Because we have a very old historic city with very narrow streets that were built for horses, not for cars. Right. So, you know, a lot of work went into this, including legislation sort of back and forth, you know, should we have this wording in here? Do we have to take out that wording? I mean, it gets down to the nitty gritty when you're talking about a changing a service that has been ingrained for so long and then getting people to have a change in dynamic and a change in mindset. So we coined the phrase bag free by 2023, trying to make it sort of catchy and pithy and something that people can start to remember. And then you have to drill down into the education part and build the education campaign like Teresa was talking about so that people really understand what that means and how it's going to impact them and how it's going to impact not only the residences, but also you have businesses and you have nonprofits that are also wondering like, well, are we gonna get a bin? So it's just a lot that goes into recycling other than just saying, making the decision, hey, let's do this. And I wish local government could work faster, but it's just, anytime you're dealing with 300,000 people that all have 300,000 different opinions, you have difficult to really take the time to make sure that you deploy it, you know, as perfectly as possible, and you try to get it right, because it's hard to go back and backtrack after you deploy something. So just wanted to add that into it. But it's been a long time coming, and we're so excited that we're finally sort of at the finish line to where we're seeing the bins be delivered on the curbs.
Awesome. Omiya, any reflections from you?
Yeah, no, I just wanted to touch on one thing that, you know, we are going to be putting more emphasis on as we move forward with our recycling system. So, you know, as we have these bins and, you know, it's all great and hunky dory, but we're also dealing with an influx of cardboard. So, you know, we were already seeing this problem as, you know, I don't want to name any names, but the big companies, everyone's ordering from them, and we're getting a lot of those packages delivered in our city. And this was ramped up with the pandemic. No one's going anywhere. Everyone's getting things ordered from online to their home. So we are seeing, you know, massive amounts, increases of cardboard. And, you know, cardboard is probably, I mean, we have aluminum, you know, we have very valuable stuff here. And it just sucks to see, you know, when we, it's a refuse only week and you're sending your cardboard out, valuable material. And there's a plethora of reasons why we would love to see it collected. One thing that, you know, I'd like to touch on is, you know, we have, if we're taking that to the landfill, it's much further. We have to go outside the city in order to have it dumped into a landfill. But if you save it to your recycling week, we only have to go to Hazelwood, and it's much closer. And, you know, we don't have to bulk up our trash trucks with cardboard. And so, and it's just triple, like many reasons why we would love to see these things on only on recycling week. So part of our, as we move forward with the bins, we're letting people know, you know, cardboard, if it's off week, keep it off the streets, you know, try to save it. You know, you can also look at, I mean, purchasing decisions. You know, we're all trying to purchase well and save money, and, you know, but also like an analysis of, do you really need that? So, and also utilizing our drop-offs. We have drop-offs, cardboard. We have a lot of, Construction Junction has a lot of cardboard plate, dumpsters, and we're ready to receive the material in the right way. We just need the cooperation of the city. So I just wanted to touch on that. You know, it's coming. We would like to see everyone participate in the right way.
If there's a couple messages, each of you have kind of touched on this indirectly, but the role and importance of education. So like consumer choices, like, do I need this package or do I need this consumable good? What are a couple messages that each of you would share with residents in terms of the decisions that we're making at home? You know, what's kind of an educational message that we can share with residents?
Echoing what Ami is mentioning is like asking yourself, do you really need that? One of the reasons why we're moving towards bins is we have the roadmap to zero waste, right? And that's a small, very small portion of that. And you know, a lot of people talk zero waste, and there's a lot of folks that are out there, and you know, they're basically producing nothing, and that's amazing. But that's not for everyone, and I don't want to get into a big discussion with that. But I think if you look at what we actually accept, and you are looking to reduce your waste stream, and I get a lot of people are at home, but we are getting a huge influx of cardboard. So we are looking at talking to some of the big companies out there and how we could maybe have some cardboard depots, because we just are struggling with picking that up. But I think I think planning ahead. So if you know you're going to go to the grocery store, you are going to buy online, really look at, okay, well, you know, the city of Pittsburgh does accept, you know, plastic bottles, jugs, and jars. We do still accept glass and things like that. So looking and planning ahead, that it, a lot of stuff comes in plastic packaging. Mm-hmm. I get that. But I think it's just really looking at decision making or the, you know, the purchasing before actually purchasing and seeing what you can do to reduce waste, you know, before you do at the grocery store.
That's a good one. So plan ahead before you purchase. Afton, mm-hmm. How about you?
I definitely say, chime in to say, you know, I agree with Teresa that it's a lot about engagement. It's a lot, also a little bit about opportunity. So when you're thinking about, you know, what you have in your household and what you're going to be using, looking at the opportunities and looking past the trash, I'll say, so that you can start to see these things as resources. I mean, a box isn't just a box. What else could that box be? And how else could that box help me? Some people use boxes to help to tamper down weeds and things like that in their garden because they break down, they're compostable. You can use some of the boxes, you know, for some fun, extra fun things for your kids to do while they're bored, for science projects, for presentations, looking past the what is of a material and seeing what you can actually use it for so that you're not spending extra money to buy some other things, you know, so that you're not spending extra money to buy presentation board, which is just corrugated cardboard. So, you know, that's one way that you can sort of look at what you're using as a resource to help you, and actually it helps your budget at the end of the day as well. You could also look at sort of economizing, you know, do you really need to buy, you know, the big package of 20 individual water bottles? If you know that you're going to be drinking the water, can you just buy the gallon jugs instead if you must buy water at all? Or could you even switch to maybe like a Brita filter or something like that? You know, like how can you economize, you know, what it is that you're using so that you're making the best of purchase? Because I mean, a gallon of water, even the fanciest of waters is usually maybe $2 at the most versus paying like almost $10 for a case of fancy water. So just looking at different materials, solutions for that, and just thinking and being realistic about how your household uses different things. Some of the other things that you could do, I know Amazon, for example, has a feature where you can do like a delivery where you can, if you deliver it, you know, next day, it's going to come in like 5 boxes. If you have it delivered Wednesday or Thursday, because it's your like Amazon day, I believe, it comes in maybe 1 or 2 boxes, things like that. And some of the other opportunities are, you know, opportunities for jobs that that can come out of things. You know, we didn't do a ton of composting in Pittsburgh, but people realized that we needed the composting in Pittsburgh. So then you have a number of businesses that sort of popped up that are testing some different things. So are there opportunities for businesses that can come out of, you know, maybe going around and collecting the trees to drop them off and working with the city to be able to drop them off? So instead of having 20 cars dropping off trees, you only have maybe 1 or 2 like, coming from a community. So there's like just some different opportunities out there.
I like that idea of looking past the trash. That's the visionary approach. Rebecca, how about on your side, any kind of words of advice to share?
I just remember being really shocked when I learned about the actual amount of what we think is recyclables that ends up at the MRF that ends up getting landfilled. I think, and like, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it was somewhere around 25% to 30% of what we send to the MRF actually then ends up at the landfill. Is that right, Teresa?
We're actually anything over 15% is high, but we're at 18-19% right now.
Okay. I think a few years ago, it might've been a little bit higher, but that's still, it's a really significant amount. So I think like just understanding for those wishful recyclers, I think for a long time, like recycling was the gold standard of environmentalism. So there's a lot of people, you know, who are just putting like anything that they can because they think it's plastic and they think it's recyclable, but that actually ends up going through more trucking because then it has to go to the MRF. It contaminates the rest of the load, and then it needs to be then trucked to the landfill anyway. So I think just being, you know, really realistic about where your recyclables are going and how it's really it's the last resort before the landfill. So yeah. Like, you know, doing all the reduction first and then the reuse, and then recycling is just less bad landfill.
So smart separation. Omaye, your educational message?
I was actually going to piggyback on what Rebecca was talking about. Like, we get a lot of calls of people who are confused, because things have changed in the last couple of years since I've been here. And, you know, they're really worried about, say they really love this yogurt, or maybe yogurt's just that's their thing, right? And they're like, I can't recycle this. What am I going to do? You know, and they get really stressed out about it. And, you know, I often impart on people to say, hey, like, just look at what you are producing and like, what can you change? What are you willing to change? And like, things that you're not going to change, you just got to deal with it. You know, like, no one else is going to take that on for you. So, just like, if you got to eat that yogurt, cool, but it's not going to go in the recycling bin. You just put it in the trash. And like, you really have to look at like, this is what I'm consuming. How can I change my consumption? And if I can't change my consumption, you got to be okay with it. But, you know, that's taking a real hard, honest look at your consumption. And this is something I've been doing for a long time, so it's easy for me. But, you know, it might be a little hard for other people. So I think you just don't stress out about it and just take a nice, calm look at it and really just go through a nice, easy process of, you know, realizing if you can or can't dispose of it in a way you wish you could. So
kind of taking a Zen approach to consuming.
Zen, breathing, mindfulness. Breathe. Yeah.
But it is an important kind of note, right? Because, yogurt's been a hot topic on the conversation today, but like, understanding consumer behavior and making that selection is really like, A, do you need it? B, if you do need it, driving that change within the producer is really important. One of the things I've been interested in about is in the European Union, they've started to introduce the extended producer responsibility laws, which is basically starting to connect the manufacturer to the product that they, how does it fit into that circular system, right? Because the onus is on the producer. Like, do you need to put that yogurt in a plastic cup that cannot be recycled? Can it be put in glass or something that can be recycled? So a lot of that is really comes from like the design and manufacturing side. So just to kind of finish up, I want to give everybody a magic wand. Teresa, you mentioned the roadmap to zero waste, which Rebecca, you played a very key role in helping us to develop that. What are some things that we need to either develop or start to put into place as we go forward in terms of improving this system? So Rebecca, I'm going to give you the magic wand first.
There's something like 20 or 30 different line item actions that we need to do to get to zero waste. I think two of the big ones, and we talked about the circular economy campus. So like having the space and having the ability to help people separate out some of those other valuable materials that might be headed for landfill that we don't already separate out of the stream. And then, you know, working with universities or companies or whatever to find value in those products and remake them to something else is one. And then the other is eventually at some point, if you really want to get down to zero waste, we're going to have to pay for it. So I think, they changed the acronym to make it sound a little more friendly, but basically it's pay as you throw. Getting to a point where, you know, recycling might be free, but, you know, eventually we should start paying, you know, by the bag or, you know, for whatever it is that we're producing that's being sent to the landfill. So that's the other thing. But at the state level, I think one of the biggest problems that we have is that we just have the lowest landfill tonnage rate. Mm-hmm. or one of the lowest, I guess, in the country. And that really is an impediment to any zero waste that we want to do here. That's why we can't be California or New York, because we're just not paying as much per ton for the landfill.
So yeah, basically, we're importers of waste.
Yeah. So it's not economical to recycle or compost or anything like that. It's added cost at this point.
So changing the economics of waste and then providing kind of the eco recovery park model of separation. That's great. Maybe we'll go to Afton. You magic wand goes to you.
Let's see. So one of the things that we deployed was the Green Events Guide, which is awesome. So once we start having events again, post-COVID, it'd be really good to start to deploy those and to test that out. You know, we've always supported green events anyways. Our annual art show has always been a green event. A lot of our marathons have been green events for years now. So we know that if we can do it, we can certainly encourage, and those are some of the largest events that the city hosts. We know that other people can do it as well. I think it's a horrible thing to allow other people to come into our city as event promoters and trash our city. So that's definitely something that I'm looking forward to being deployed going forward in the future. So that's one thing. And I'm also looking forward to for people finding other ways to use the waste, basically, or to not use it, to really decide, you know, do I even really need this in the first place? You know, the best trash is the trash that you don't make. So I think that those are probably my favorite, most hoped for things to happen as far as zero waste goes moving forward.
Awesome. Magic wand over to Omie.
Well, my magic wand, I had it and then it's gone, but I really like compost, and I like composting, and you know, we do it the minimum. You know, we have like the twice a year yard debris collection, and one of my things I would love to see is, you know, food waste not going to the landfill. You know, first of all, if it's still good, you know, should you be buying it if you're wasting food? And also, you know, like, can the food go to someone else? And also, can it not go in a landfill? Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think, you know, we have a massive problem with food waste in the country. And, you know, if you, you know, organics should not be going to the landfill. So my big magic wand, I've been to Toronto and I love their system. And I know Toronto is in Canada and they have, you know, they're just kind of a different, you know, different stuff going on over there. And it's awesome that they have the three pail system. You know, you have a trash, you have a recycling, and you have compost. And, you know, my big dream for the city is having compost collection. You know, Pittsburgh deserves that. We deserve, you know, to have the cleanest city, and composting seems like the best way to clean up our landfill and also bring more health back into our soils.
That's so awesome. Teresa, you get the final magic wand word today.
Yeah, speaking of composting and chipping away at zero waste, is, like Amu's mentioned, in-house, the dream in-house composting. So we are working with an engineering firm right now to get some conceptual models. I know, Grant, you've talked about anaerobic digestion. Like, let's think bigger here. Eco-resource recovery park, you know, transfer station. Rebecca was mentioning that. Those are some dreams, right? And just the composting in general, you know, we spend roughly over $100,000 a year for 4,200 tons, which is actually very low for a mid-sized city. And my dream would be, I'm also with Amie, food scrap composting, but doing stuff in-house and having satellite locations where we can start processing our own waste. We have the ability here in Pittsburgh to control our waste more, right? Because we're already controlling it. So let's do it. And the other thing is bulk. I like to look at that. Mattresses. We just take everything under the sun because Rebecca's mentioning, you know, the landfill tipping fees low, but those are some of, my dreams. But
awesome. This is so much fun. You guys single-handedly in under 50 minutes created solutions to the Zero Waste Challenge. I want to thank you guys for the work that you do. It's just exciting, not just to hear these ideas, but also seeing them put in to implementation because of all of your efforts. So that is just so terrific. So with that, I just want to thank our guests today for being here with us and talking a little trash with or in waste and recycling as well. It's great to be with you here on the Grant Street Experience. Thank you all for listening and have a terrific day. Thanks, everyone.